Okay, we're live now. We are live now. We already have people coming in. That's very nice. And well, today we're gonna have my good friend for years, Tony Parra. And in this occasion, more than a good friend, if you don't know him, he's an outstanding strength coach. He has produced a lot of athletes. He has had to deal with athletes and most of his career. So it's very interesting. It's going to be a very interesting topic. Tony, I don't know if you can see the chat. If you click somewhere where it says chat, Anthony's saying, he's saying hi to both of us. I think everybody can see the chat.
Yeah, so, Anthony's. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So this is on one announcement. Today, we are going to launch at 8 o'clock my time, so in 1 hour, the Strength Community Membership. And it's going to have two different packages. The first one is called Just Train. The price is $19 per month. And it includes two training programs, one for hypertrophy, the other one for metabolic conditioning, and discount of 15% on the supplements from this Nutridyne and ATP. The second package is called Train and Learn. The price is $65, and it includes the same two training programs as in Just Train, plus relative strength training program, also one per month. It will include also two videos, two educational videos on different topics. The first two topics are going to be, one of them is about breathing and different aspects of breathing and how it applies to strength training. And the second video is about training twice a day and all the possibilities and how to play around with that. So we are having a special for the first 50 people that sign up. They will get a $150 gift certificate for classes only in 2023. So if you are one of the first 50 and you're planning to attend a class, you will get a discount of $150. So, Tony, no more intros. Let's start ourselves. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Carlos Castro. I'm a strength coach. I'm the founder of the Strength Community. I own a gym in Colombia, and I have produced gold and silver medalists in the World Championships. Pan Americans, nationals, and I have had to deal with a wider range of different athletes. And now I want to introduce Tony. As I said in the beginning, we're very good friends from a long time ago. Our philosophies match basically almost perfectly. And whenever we have doubts, we contact each other and ask. And every time we meet, is very nice. It's just it's mostly talking about strength training and athletes and how to do this, how to do that, and so on.
That's,
it's beautiful.
That's
but say again.
Okay, what do you think about this training? It's always
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a very nice conversation. I agree with you. I'm listening a little bit cut for you. Is everybody listening, Tony, a little bit cut, or is it just me? Oh, okay. He probably left the room for a second. Just, okay, he's back.
I'm here.
Can you hear me? Okay, it's good.
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly.
All right. Okay, cool. So today's conversation is about how strength training, when used properly, can have a positive impact on sports performance and positively influence an athlete's career, or this is very important, ruin the career of the athlete if it's not done correctly. So, Tony, let's start. I know you have successfully coached a lot of athletes. please tell us a little bit about yourself and which sports and which achievements have you got coaching those athletes?
Okay. Well, actually, I started my coaching career training the national judo team. That was my first job as a coach before I even got to, let's say, strength training per se.
Okay.
So I got lucky to train a lot of athletes from the get-go. I was an athlete myself, so for me that was an easy fit. For me, it was much more difficult to deal with gym pop afterwards, like years after. But actually, you know, it was a blessing actually. So I had trained Olympians in different sports like volleyball, track and field, and judo. I've had a Olympic medalist in Summer Olympics and Olympic Youth Olympic Games. I've been lucky to train with or train to world champions and world medalists, Pan American medalists, international medalists in karate, in jiu-jitsu, judo, volleyball as well, even bowling. So I've had the opportunity to work with a wide range of athletes, but mostly I've specialized in like grappling, like judo, jiu-jitsu, and fighting sports mostly.
Okay. Combat sports, that's great.
Yep.
That's great. That's great. Well, and you were an athlete on those same sports, so.
Yes, correct.
That's amazing. You understand the sport better than anyone else. Yep. All right. So we have a lot of strength coaches listening to us. Tell us, how did you find your first athlete, or how your first athlete, which was the national judo team, found you in order to be strength trained?
Okay, so my first job as a coach with the national judo team was after I got my first educational experience. I went to Barcelona to train, to study for 3-4 months about high performance sports. And when I come back home, I got into the training world. But my first athlete as a strength coach, like individually, since, as you mentioned, I was a judo athlete for a long, long time. So my first guy that would train with me was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, actually. He was competing. And since he knew I was, I studied about strength and conditioning, and I was a judo player. So he said, well, you must know something about the sport and have experience in the knowledge of the strength and conditioning world. So he came to me and we trained for years, actually.
That's very nice. That's very nice. And if I'm not wrong, you also trained Abraham, who became world champion black belt in BJJ as well, right?
Yes, yes. He's actually he's been medaling. He medaled in the world jiu-jitsu world championships like seven or eight times. He was a world champion in purple belt and brown belt and double world champion in masters black belt, and he had a great and a successful competitive career.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy. He's a very good athlete. Sure. Very good.
Yes. Yep. Correct.
Okay, so I'm going to share a little bit of my experience. I want to make a little bit more like a conversation. So I don't know if this has happened to you, Tony, but in my experience, not all athletes come to you as a strength coach when things are going well, but mostly when they need help.
Correct.
They normally kind of rely on their talent, their strengths, their drive, because they always want to be training until they at some point or get injured or they are not progressing in their sports career. And for example, when I started training Gil Tarifi, who just won the world championships in BJJ, she came to me with 3 injuries, one in the neck, one in the shoulder, one in the lower back, plus a surgery in her knee. So that's how we receive athletes. Tell us a little bit, how do you receive your athletes? Is it?
Well, actually, it depends on the sport. Most like very high level athletes will come to you with a like it happened to you with an injury, or on a slump, especially like let's say baseball or something like that. Say they have a very bad year, or they've been having a bad years, like a couple years not working or performing as they want it, and then they look for you. As long as the athlete is doing well, he's not gonna look for you. Very difficult, because he would say, if it's not broken, I don't want to fix it. So, you know, that's one. And the other one is, it happened to me that when they start, actually they come sometimes at a younger age, when they start to get the level or the level of competition that they need an extra kick or an extra edge. So some people will go like, now you need to train correctly, or you need to train your strength. So they go and they look for you because they want to keep that going on. But actually it's when they start like losing, like let's say you have a young athlete, now it's starting to train or compete in the senior division. Now he's not doing as well as before, because now he knows he lacks strength, he lacks speed, he lacks this or that, and then he looks for you. He looks for a qualified strength coach.
Yeah, that is correct. That's my same experience in most of the cases, not in all of them, but in most of the cases.
Yeah, so they need most something. Of the cases.
So what do you think is the main problem that the strength coaching community has today related to produce results in their athletes? Because not all strength coaches produce results. Not everybody that trains an athlete can take an athlete to the podium or the team to a podium or something like that. What do you think is the main problem?
Well, first of all, I say luck, but the most important thing is having a talented athlete. Because if you have an athlete that is number 200 in the world, it's very difficult for you to get into the first place because it's so far out. But if you have an athlete that's 15th in the world, he's 10th in the world, or he has the talent, then you can get it. So most of the successful strength coaches is they had the fate of having great athletes to work with. So if your athlete is not talented, you're gonna make him improve or make her improve, and he'll be better, and he or she will be better. But maybe get into the top of the heap. I don't know. Maybe not that. You're not that lucky. But if you have a great athlete with a good discipline and talent, yeah, it's gonna be much better. Now, build a reputation of having good results, then the better athletes start getting to you, you know. But you have to start somewhere, and sometimes it's not with the top athletes in the world or top athletes in your area. You just have to make yourself, you know, available to those. Now, technically speaking, I think most of the problem with the strength coaches is they try to be fancy too fast. They don't address the basics. And for me, the most important thing you need to do, like I would say, number one objective of a good strength coach is avoiding injury. If you avoid injury, you increase performance. People say, how's that? Well, if you avoid injury, he have more time on the mat or on the field. He has more hours of practice available to him, so he can improve his game. So before getting stronger or faster or endurance, it's like get him not to get hurt. That's the first thing, because he has more time to train. The more you train, the more you'll improve. So if you get injured and that's 3 weeks off, then if the injury is very bad, then you need surgery, that's 6 weeks off. Then if you injure again, then that's 1 week. So he has no time to improve his game. So absolutely. If you see the best athletes in the world are the ones that they tend not to get hurt. They tend. It would happen eventually, but they are not injury prone. And that's the first thing we need to address.
Yeah, I entirely agree with you. That is very important. Once I read, I don't know where, that the first thing you should do after doing structural balance is moving athletes into power. And I'm like, that's very interesting. I want to see how you can make in progress just doing that. Anyways,
now
adding to what you said, I'm seeing lack of structure, you know, and it's the lack of structure of going into the basics like you were just mentioning. And together with that lack of structure, trying to be fancy, they are lacking a lot of good and deep knowledge on many different things that for us are basics, like the biomechanics, how to periodize, or how to do a tapering, or even how to convert strength into power, because you can get somebody super strong, but if the athlete is a power athlete, you need to move that strength into power. And people trying to be fancy or not having all the structure behind the whole preparation of an athlete is what I see the most. Is what I see the most.
Yeah, because you know, I'm a big fan of structure. Because I say structure has a quantity concept in itself. So people would try to quantify everything, like or this speed, or this many reps, or this many amount of pounds. But that's all good. But if you don't have a structure, like if you have a structure or a system in place, the quantification, it's easier and it's a given. It's intrinsic to the system. You'd have to be splitting hairs. So I totally agree with you. And part of being fancy is that it's not having a structured set.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. It's very important. Structure, like every time I get an athlete, I spend hours, if not days, structuring the whole thing to trying to put things together. And then there is at some point you go like, okay, this happened, so this is my structure. I need to change. I need to adjust. I need to do this and that and that. And it's a long process. And I don't know. I haven't seen people like willing to do the whole process because it's takes time. It takes a lot of mental effort.
And you have to be aware that you can have the best structure in the world. Like stuff will happen that will make a change. You have to change it midway. Yeah, anything can change. Like a competition that you weren't aware of, or now she has to do, or he has to do, or some minor injury, or some minor setback. He got sick, or she got sick, or whatever. Everything it's up for grabs. So you need to be. I think, but if you have a structure, like we've been saying, it's easier for you to adjust. If you don't have any structure, it's like now you have to change, like. It's impossible for you to get back on track.
Yes, exactly. So plan ahead, structure everything ahead, and you'll be better off training your athletes or even just gen pop clients. It's not a problem.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So tell us a little bit, how do you normally start with an athlete? The athlete comes to you, say, I don't know, whatever. I want to achieve this. I compete in that, whatever it is. How do you normally start with that athlete?
With the athlete, I try to have an interview, which is like just talk to the athlete and know why are you coming to me? The why is very important, you know. So why I want to do this. So actually I'm training a 16-year-old kid that he's about to get signed by a soccer team in Mexico or Spain. So he's in between those. So he's been traveling and getting looked at and everything. So it's, okay, so why are you coming here? Oh, I want to get signed because now these teams want me. So I need to be on the top of my game. So now you have a purpose. So what's the goal? afterwards, I need a timeline. So when is this happening? So it's not like we're going to try to train and with no set goal or timeline. So I need a time frame. We have 12 weeks. We have 16 weeks. What do we have? That's the first thing. And this is all theory. I call it theory. We just like we write it down. We make a plan. Then I do the evaluations, the assessments. Like, okay, so you're, let's say, Thomas test, whatever, length tension test, strength testing, or you know, injury like CLAT test. You know the drill.
All the tests. Yeah.
All the tests you need. So you know where they at that moment, and then according to what you see and what they want, you make a plan. So, because some people will go like, oh, I need more agility. No, you don't need more agility or more speed. You're just fucking weak. So you need to get stronger. Or you're totally unbalanced. That's why you cannot run in a straight line. So let's try to get this done. You know? So I'll do that. That's the first thing that I do. Just assessment and talk to them. And for me, timeline is crucial. Like I only have 12 weeks because I need to work on a time frame. So you know what time do you have available, so you have to make the most out of it. It's not the same if I have 6 months that I have if I have 2 months or 3 months. It's completely absolutely different program.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. I do the exact same thing. And I guess you just forgot to mention, because I know you do it, the neurotransmitter profile.
Yeah, sure. For high-level athletes, I do it because I need to how to work. But you know what? I do it after I see the assessments and mechanically, because let's say he has a weak VMO or bad hamstrings or whatever. So having the neurotransmitter profile at that moment, it doesn't help me a lot. I have to address that issue. But I would have it, or I would do it later on. Then when he's ready to move forward and progress to new training sessions or new training systems. So I go, okay, now I'm going to use that as one of the tools that I use.
Yeah. Well, those tools that you were mentioning are so precise and so well designed that I remember I got called to coach a swimmer. And I did all the testing, and then I had a meeting with the head coach of the swimming team, and the head coach came to my gym, and I asked the head coach, hey, thank you for coming. I appreciate it. We need to work as a team. That's something very important. When you have a head coach, you need to work as a team. I mean, yes. You need to row in the same direction. Otherwise, it's going to be a mess. No, the athlete's not going to get anywhere. So the coach came, the swimmer came, she was a kid at that time, I don't even remember her age, and she came with her father. So as a coach, please tell me, what do we need to improve in her? And the father immediately stopped the coach, and he said, no, you tell him what you found on your assessment. And I was like, sure, no problem. I did this test, and I found this, I did this test, and I found this, and I did this test, and I found this. The coach looked at me and he said, I have nothing to do here. And I was like, what do you mean you have nothing to do here? What did I say something wrong or what? And the coach said, you just said exactly what she needs. And I was like, but I don't know anything about swimming. And he said, but yeah, that is exactly what she needs. And that's how we started working. So those tests that we perform are extremely accurate and precise and give super, super valuable information. So you said then you do all the testing, you start the training process, and then you do the assessment of the neurotransmitters. But yeah. How do you, besides taking into account the interview that you do in the beginning and the testing and the neurotransmitter, how do you find out what you need to provide to your athletes? Because you can see things, but on the way, as you mentioned it, things change. So how do you find out what you need to start providing to your athlete in a regular basis, I would say? Because, and I don't know, I have had to change training programs in a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And
so I would address like progress, like how fast can he progress on it? And that's, for me, it's a dead given. Like if you see your athlete's not progressing, even especially in the gym, so you need to go like, okay, this is not working for him. Like if the pain, if he has some pain and the pain's not going away, like if you don't get any improvement at all of any kind, then you have to see what you're doing. Because the thing is that I say any type of improvement is improvement.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, so it's usually I use a scale 1 to 10 on the pain. So you came here, it was a 10, an 8 in pain, but now it's a 4. Okay, that's good. It used to hurt every day. Now it hurts a couple of days a week. Okay, that's an improvement. So now I used to have a very bad time making like change of directions, or I would get tired. At the end of the day, now I'm not as tired. Even if you're like now fighting sport, oh, I'm feeling much stronger. I can't do this now. I usually couldn't do that. So everything in his life needs to have an improvement. If you have a supplementation, then you go, okay, so, because we do the metabolic profiling, yeah. Metabolic balance, and then you have the supplements, you have the food and everything, and then, okay, I'm sleeping better. I'm getting muscle. I'm leaning out. So all this needs to get in tune. And you need to see a progress in those. If there's no any progress at all, then you have to look at what's happening. I won't say it's 100% your fault, but you need to talk to him and see what he's doing outside and what you're doing on your side.
Exactly. And again, feedback, because we get the feedback in the gym very easily, just asking the person. But the feedback in the field or in the mat or in the court, wherever they are competing, I always ask for the feedback. How is it going? How is it going? Are you improving? Is your speed faster? Is your serving better? Or is your jump longer? Even if it's a 1 centimeter, I don't care. As you said, an improvement is an improvement, and I'll take it.
Yeah, and actually, when you train high-level athletes, they have a lot of a proprioception. They feel the body. They know the body quite well, like in an instinctive manner. So they would say, yeah, I'm feeling looser. I'm feeling faster. I feel this is better. And that's, they have a very good assessment to their body.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And that's why, for me, every training session at the gym is an assessment session. Because I can check what's going on. I can check, okay, the person is getting weak on this or is not recovered, or, and it will give me a lot of feedback. Just watching all the movements, watching all the reps and all that gives me a lot of feedback to adjust whatever needs to be adjusted or not, or just continuing that way. Yeah, sure. I yeah, exactly. All right, so have you ever had problems, like specific problems with an athlete? You don't have to name names, but that you think it's worth sharing with the audience?
Like problems?
Yeah, let me give you an example of mine. I have an example in my head. I was called to train a long jumper. Very talented girl, very talented. Her legs were like twice the length of any other person. Impressive. And at some point, I don't know, since the very beginning, I said, I need to talk to a head coach. I need to talk to a head coach. The head coach didn't want to talk to me. Why? I don't know. And at some point, she started not progressing. In the beginning, she started progressing. She started getting stronger. And then she started not progressing. And then the father one day showed up with her at the gym and said, we have a problem. And I said, tell me about it. She is not progressing. She in her sport. So I see two options. It's whether you or is the head coach. So I want to make a test. And I said, sure, tell me. So let's measure vertical jump, which of course for a long jumper is very important, and see how it improves in these next 4 weeks. And then on the other side, I'm going to measure the long jump to see who's doing the job right. And I said, okay. And we measured the vertical jump. And I put the line on the wall where she jumped. And that's it. We trained. And after 4 weeks, when she came back with the father, I said to the father, okay, it's been 4 weeks. Time to test. Are you ready? And the guy, he wouldn't even remember. He didn't even remember. So he said, oh, it's 4 weeks. Yeah, it's 4 weeks. So I told the girl, jump. And she jumped. And her vertical jump improved like a hand. And the guy was like, oh, my God, that's a good improvement. Are you sure that was the original line? And I said, yeah, it's a Sharpie in the wall. It's the only one. So I cannot change it. And the guy said, okay, I know where the problem is. And of course, it's not you. So what ended up happening was that even though she was very talented and she was a great athlete, I had to tell her, I cannot train you anymore. Because I didn't know where should I go. I didn't know what I have to do. I didn't know what the head coach was doing and what I should be doing. Because in certain occasions, and I'm going to give an example of swimming, one day the head coach calls me and said, we're not going to use legs. We're just going to use arms for butterfly. So that's a lot of internal rotation. What was my thought process? Okay, all I need to do is external rotations. And that was her workout. A lot of different external rotations. And that kept her in balance and was fine. But with this other girl, I didn't know what to do. Like I could kept making her stronger and maybe powerful or whatever. But if I go in the opposite direction that the other coach is doing, nothing's going to happen. So that's I don't know if you have faced a situation like that or not with your athletes.
Well, actually, what I have usually is a term. I have a lot of problems with loads, with like volume of training during the week. Because okay. And competition. So one of my pet peeves is like, oh, she has to win or he has to win all competitions. Like he needs to compete every fucking competition has to win. And so like, it's impossible for me to taper her or taper the athlete every 3 weeks. The athlete won't improve because when it's time to load, now I have to fucking back off for him to train. I'm sorry, for him to compete. So I can't do that. So it's like, okay, just pick three competitions which are the top, and pick two or three which are the let's call it less important competition that if she wins or not is doesn't matter. Yeah. So it's just like for you to try new things and get it some experience of competition and do that. No, they have to win. I can't do that. Like, that's impossible. That's number one. Number two is, like, they want to train three times a week here. They want to do road training, and then they want to do mat training as well. Like, that's too much. I think that's just too much. Like, you need to back off on the mat and focus on the physical aspect now. And as time goes on and competition draws near, I will back off on the training sessions, and you increase your time on the mat or on the court. Because that's the way for you to balance it out. And that's very hard for especially head coaches to understand, because they think they just need to do their sport all year a lot. And I said, not at that level. When you're at a high level, like LeBron James doesn't need, he knows how to shoot a ball. Like he doesn't need any more of that. There's a moment when he needs to, I'm not saying stop training that. Maybe he'd be able to allow it. There's sports that they can't have that luxury, like fighting sports, but you can back off a bit. Like if you train every day on wrestling, when it's off season, quote unquote, you can train twice a week and do more of a strength training or recovery training or getting all muscles back in order and doing your therapy or whatever you need to do, or your rehab work, and then you start again. That's, let's say, 6-8 weeks. But people tend not to do that. They just want to keep pounding on it, thinking they'll get better by doing more of it. But what I do is just get more unbalanced, because at the end of the day, Carlos, we're never going to balance the athlete. Because the amount of work they do on the mat, it's unbelievable. We'll never be able to outdo it. But we can get them, we can, I think I heard this the other days, we can keep them on balance with a less risk of injury. At the end of the day, that's it. Because one of the most important thing is you need to, the athlete must be on balance for him to do this sport. Like, there's no, if a sprinter is perfectly balanced between hip, posterior chain and quads, he will never be fast. He needs to be more, he needs to be stronger on the posterior chain for him to move faster. But my job is to try to offset a little bit of it just to delay or avoid the injury. That's it. So, but coaches don't understand that. And also there's a balance between the wear and tear of a sport and the, let's say the recovery of a strength training session. So you need that. You need to get them stronger. You need to get them more muscular. Sometimes when the seasons, when you have sports that are very long, like long seasons, like baseball, basketball, all those, you need a time off where they need to get recovered and get some muscle on them just to keep improving. So for me, that's the reasoning I people don't get, and especially head coaches.
Yeah, and I have to say, and I have to say thank you for pointing that out, because it's a great advice. It's a great advice that we all have faced as strength coaches, and for the strength coaches that are listening to us, you are going to face it, and you know that you have to put your foot on the ground and say, listen, you cannot recover with that much volume. And I have a case, I had a case with a tennis player, but I will tell it later. But it's like, a great piece of advice. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, actually, people say, I always ask my athletes, who do you think wins at the end? It's not the one that trained the most. It's the one that got there more recovered. if you train a lot and you got there tired, you're done. It doesn't matter how much you train. Now, you recover from what you did, good. Like, actually, in BJJ, they have this practice, which they kill themselves up to last day before a competition. They train a lot. Well, at least they used to. I don't know now. I'm a bit out of the loop of that. But I would say after, like, the last week, of like 10 days before the competition, you already gained in strength, in conditioning, in technical expertise or competition expertise. It's done. You're not going to improve in a 7-day window. That's not true. So what you're going to get is injured or overtraining. So it's time for you to recover and get in the better shape you can before competition.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And I also tell my athletes, what we didn't do in this period, it doesn't matter if it's 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks, we're not going to do it in 1 week. So what is done is done, period.
That's it.
You're good to go.
Correct. That's true.
So being a strength coach, have you ever had to use all your knowledge of training and everything around it to rehab athletes? And have you found that regular rehab methods don't provide what you are looking for? I'm talking about the regular physiotherapy and so on.
Okay. So yes, I've used a lot of my expertise. Like all the, you know, all the tools we have. And what I've seen is, I think the trend is changing a little bit more in rehab spaces, like physios. But the traditional physio is more about getting the pain away. Getting the pain
with full range of motion. Yeah.
Yeah. just get them no pain and just get them to move and that's it. But they don't get to the source of the pain. Like what caused this? That's number one. Mm. And then they don't do a good job, let's say, in strengthening the body after the therapy. So what you see is guys go there, they do 10, 20 sessions of therapy, the pain's gone away, they start playing again. A month later, they're back, they go back injured because they didn't take the why did you get injured? Why? If it's not a contact injury, like you got hit, you fell to the floor, or you twisted an ankle or something like that, it's like, okay, I pulled my hamstring, I have a pain in my shoulder, then why are you injured? Why is this happening? And some people don't get there. They just do the lasers or do the heat and ultrasound and cold and hot, and then back at it again. And then I experienced that as an athlete. Sorry. So
yeah,
I think what my success with the rehabbing athlete is I've been able to pinpoint the cause, or most of the time pinpoint the cause, and I've been able to fix it or to help them fix it. Mm-hmm. And also I've been humble enough to know, you know, to say, hey, this is out of my league. I don't have this kind of knowledge, and say, you need to look for someone else. Like, I can do the strengthening, but right now you need therapy, because sometimes you need to put the pain to go away, and then you do something else.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. And at some point, athletes get injured. It could be during a competition. It could be something silly. They are crossing the street and they trip on something and the ankle gets sprained or whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. And with our knowledge of strength training and all the details of the biomechanics and knowing how to manage the strength curves and all the loading parameters, I know you use dry needling. I use Gua Sha and ART. So all of those right tools will allow us to get somebody that is or got injured and put that person or that athlete back in the game way faster than if we wait for a regular rehab or recovery process.
Yes.
And of course,
also that
the training program for that person that is injured must be the right training program, because it's entirely different game, a training program for rehabbing or for making somebody better at competition. So
yes,
yeah, that's
yes.
That's very interesting. Okay, if you would have to pick one strength quality that you need to train, let's say you can pick only one. I know that's not going to happen, but this is just a theoretical question. If you pick only one, which one it would be and why?
Strength.
Okay.
And why? Because, okay, so strength is the mother of all qualities. I don't say that. We've learned that from Charles and all our teachers. So, because
yeah,
when you're stronger in the pyramid of the strength qualities, strength is the base. There's no way for you to get powerful or endurance without strength. That's why it's called strength endurance. So you need the strength to have a strength endurance. You can be enduring, but if you have no strength, then it's just endurance. If you need speed, strength, you need strength. You need strength, speed, same thing. Power, the same thing. Like, if always strength is in the formula, and it's I'm not making this up. It's just the math. Okay. So if you are weak, you cannot be powerful. Okay. I'm not talking about, oh, you need to be this strong or that strong. That's individual to the athlete and for the sport. But strength must be there. And even this is one of the things that I said, and this is my theory. I have no research. I'm going by experience. If your sport is a sport that will detriment your strength, then strength is even more important for you to keep. So let's say if you are endurance, like marathon runner, which it tends to make you weak because of the long hours on the road. So you need to have to pay special attention to keep the strength. I'm not saying you need to squat 500 pounds. I'm saying you need to keep attention to the strength quality in your training program. Like, never, because if you stop training it or you disregard it, then the injuries will come, the performance will diminish, everything, because it's the base. If the base reduces or it gets smaller, your peak is going to get smart as well. It's not going to be as high. So you need to keep that in mind. Now, I'm saying as a base, I'm not saying that that strengths. But this is like, okay, so if you're a marathon runner, of course your strength endurance is going to be important. But you need to keep your strength to have that strength endurance. So you cannot disregard it completely. Because people would say, oh, I'm a runner. I don't need to be that strong. Because what I need to do is have a high level of stamina or endurance. Yes, but you won't be able to have that if you're not strong enough. So I think we need to realize you have different phases in the training regime and in the periodization, in the period. So you need to manage it correctly and know when do you have to prioritize the strength training as maximal strength or hypertrophy or whatever, and when you need to prioritize the endurance part of it at the end of the day.
Exactly. I 100% agree with you. And I asked myself the same question, and I got the exact same answer for myself. Strength is the mother of all physical qualities. I've heard it from Bompa, Tudor Bompa, and Matveyev. It's been said many times. I don't know who invented it, but it doesn't really matter. But it simply is true. And that's why I'm somehow against those training with the speed ladders or the Bosu ball or something movement specific for the sport, weighted. So a boxer gets a dumbbell and starts punching with the dumbbell. That's not making him strong. That's making me slow, as you wouldn't believe. And what we need to do is basically develop strength, because when you develop strength first, then you can, as you mentioned it, build up on it power, strength, endurance. You can gain more hypertrophy if that's your goal. It doesn't really matter. Strength,
yes,
is the real base. And you answered my next question, which was how gaining strength changes the performance of your athletes. But you already mentioned it. Let's get into the injury prevention, because that's very interesting. Have you noticed that your athletes get injured less than the rest of the team or the rest of the peers or stuff like that?
110%. Like one of the things that people get back to me is because they don't get injured. As I told you before, I make a very distinct effort for them to not get injured. Because the more time they have on the mat, on the court, on the field, the better they will get. And of course, you have the head coach on your side.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I remember once I was training a speed motorcycle team for, they were Triumph, the motorcycles. And one of the guys fell in a curve and just hit the tires with the head. And I thought, like, it was so hard that I thought he broke his neck. He stood up, got the bicycle. He injured an ankle or something like that. Something like 1 month later, the same thing happened, because the track has something wrong in there, to the Ducati team racer. And he stayed in the hospital, if I am not mistaken, for 8 weeks. So the Ducati team called me. Listen, we checked the videos. They fell the same way. They hit the tires the same way. It's a problem in the track. But why the hell, your racer, nothing happened. And why the hell this guy's been in the hospital for 8 weeks? Can you train our team? And injury prevention is simply extremely important. And that gets to the point that on injury prevention, what we have discussed before on previous occasions is that it's not only about the sport itself, but just whatever is susceptible of being injured. In speed motorcycle, the head is just like so anywhere. So for me, neck is very important. But just give us some examples of what you have done.
So actually, I would have to quote. I will have to trademark this quote. Is injury prevention improves performance.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we should fucking make a t-shirt about it, because that's it does, like, just by not getting injured, you have more time to train.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, I have two t-shirts to make with two of your sayings. The other one is, it's not too heavy, you are not just strong enough. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
That's also a good one. I love it. Tony, have you ever coached an athlete that have decreased the performance because of the training you provided?
No.
Never. Okay.
No. Never.
Cool.
Like never. Because actually, I fight to the teeth. Because if I say, okay, you want to train 3 times a week, you need to fucking step off. Like, you have to back off on something else because you're doing too much. If they don't back off, say, I can't train. I can't do this. Like, I'm sorry. And I just get out of it.
Because it
doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I have to admit that happened to me once. And it was exactly what you said. It's a tennis player. He started saying, I'm getting slow in the field. Like, why are you getting slow in the field? And I told him, we're going to be training here. You have to decrease the training in the court. And he said, yeah, I will. But he never did. When he was getting slower, I said, just how many times a week are you training still tennis? And he said, 5 times. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, we're training 4 times here, training 5 times there. And so I stopped the training, literally. I said, okay, no more training for 2 weeks. Don't play for 2 weeks. And then go and play. After he played again, he said, I was flying in the court. I said, yeah, of course, I recovered. I hope you learned your lesson.
Correct. Yeah, I had something like that. It was a bit like harsher, because I had a triathlete, and, and swim and ride a bike, and then she wanted to come over and train here, and I was like, it is too much. You're getting better now, because you're like, she wouldn't jump a credit card. So it was that she was so weak, like any type of training session would do better for her. And then but I was like, this is too much. I said, no, because I'm a triathlete, I need to do this. Then she got hit by a car. Like, she got injured, she was on crutches for weeks, and on a cast, and the only thing she could do was strength training. And I said, now you're coming 4 times a week. and we trained. After she got out of the cast and the crutches and some therapy, like, the best times ever. Like, from that moment on, she listened to me. Like, I would say, you need to cut on this, you need to cut on that. And she would do it, and she was like, she got like, She got convinced the moment she caught. And I'm not saying the strength training was the key. I think it was the decrease in volume. She was overtrained. That's why she never seemed to improve as much as she wanted.
Yes, absolutely. We have two nice comments here. One is from Jonathan saying, in professional sports, most teams are not up to date with the modern training tendencies, or better said, proper strength training. And I absolutely agree with that. And Anthony is saying, glad to see that most athletes and coaches nowadays realize that strength training should be a staple in virtually any sport. So let me jump to the next question, because I know you have to leave very soon. But do you see any importance in addressing body composition for your athletes?
Of course. Okay. I think body composition, okay, so there's nothing wrong with getting lean. I mean, why would it be? Yeah. Actually, one of my only bowling athlete, she was already two-time world champion, and she was a slump and an injury and all that, and she was like not doing so well. She got to me. She was a school friend of mine. And we started training, we changed the eating. All I did was body composition work. I did anything. I didn't do anything like, oh, well, you're going to throw the ball like this, and this is the leg you use, and this is the angle you use. No, of that. I just get, you're just not overweight, but you had a lot of fat on you. We just need to get you leaner, and more muscular. And she went to the Pan Am Games, she got silver with just like 12 weeks of training. And that's it. So for me, I think it is of utmost importance to get people in good shape, because actually that will help you build on top of it.
Yeah.
And of course, like the insulin resistance, like the insulin sensitivity you get from getting a better composition, like the metabolic health you get from it. Like there's so many benefits. People think it's just about looking good. No, all the things, like especially in sports that are long duration, you need to have a very good metabolic health. Your body needs to use the fuels correctly. They need to use the enzymatic balance should be there. Everything should be there for you. If you're a shot putter, maybe not so much, because it's just you're going to push it
one
for
effort.
0.1,
yeah.
0.5 seconds, and that's it. But if you're a fighter, you need to get in shape.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Funny enough, This is a story of the Speed Motorcycle team again. I found out that the best they perform was at 10% body fat. If I make them leaner, no extra improvement. Of course, I made them leaner, but I didn't allow the body weight to change. So the motorcycle was carrying exactly the same weight, but I couldn't increase the speed or the time it took them to get in the curves or so on by making them leaner. So I said, okay, 10% is enough. 10% is fine. That's how they do it. There's a question here from Arthur. He's saying, how do you plan strength training during in season?
Okay, me?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, so it depends on the sport, depends on the length of it, but most, like a general rule is I go twice a week. I go short training sessions, around 14 sets, 16 sets at most. And I will alter, it depends on the sport, as I said, and the length of the season, but I would go one strength session and one hypertrophy session, or one power session, one strength session, depending on the sport. And depending, because there are moments where you can get into, let's say, strength sessions and hypertrophy sessions at the longer the season runs, like at the end of the season, because you need to keep that muscle mass. But maybe in the start of the season, you can get away with just doing more strength and more power just to keep improving. Like Preston would say, you need to keep improving, because the idea is never like maintain. I think the maintenance work is given by the little amount of volume you will be managing. But the training session itself should be not balls to walls, but try. The intention should be to improve your lifts, to improve even marginally every day.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And the topic is getting more and more questions. You let me know when you need to leave.
Like 3 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So Arthur is saying, I'm going to get two in the same one. Arthur is saying, what is the most important for you? You just mentioned it. If it's strength, muscle mass, or body fat, or etc. But Gamal is asking, what would be the muscle split for those two sessions? And he's saying, I guess it will depend on the sport, but can you give an example?
Okay, so most of the time I would do whole body routines. I think it's better, because you don't wanna have a sore body during in season, unless you have like a day off or whatever. But I would do just whole body. Doesn't matter like if it's strength and it's a sport, like I would do like maybe squats and chins, like most bang of your buck exercises. If it's a power workout, I would go like power cleans or like very more of explosive type of work, but not too complicated stuff for real.
I agree 100%. I agree with you. I have another question from Anthony. Anthony, don't worry, I will address it. But I know Tony has to leave. So I want to ask you, Tony, if you have any advice for your for the audience that are strength coaches and now are making interesting questions, which I love, and also how can they find you? Because I'm pretty sure they would like to hear about you.
Yeah. So my advice is, man, like just have patience, just like practice. Like I know a lot of people, like Ben Prentice, who say there's a lot of professional course takers, which is great to have courses, which is great to read, which is great to learn. But if you don't practice, it just it doesn't do anything. So whatever you learn, like take one course, practice it till death, then take another course and practice it again. So don't try to rush, and just like Charles said, do what works. You know, master your basics. That's the most thing. Exactly. And for to reach me, just go on the I'm on Instagram, Tony Parra, same, just TonyParra, and you'll find me there, and I'll be glad to get in contact with you guys.
All right, Tony, I'm gonna stay here answering some questions that are coming. Perfect. And guys, if you have more questions, but I know you have to leave. I already took a little bit more of time than I should.
It's okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing your
wisdom. Thank you for having me.
And looking forward to have another one, maybe just expanding in the subject or something like that. All right, guys. So there's a question from Tony. Don't worry. You're good to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So there's a question from Anthony. But before I get into the question, so type your questions. That is not a problem. I can stay a little bit answering them. All questions are welcome, but I just want to make a little announcement here, and it's I want to talk because the strength community was just launched 2 minutes ago. So basically, what I want to do is just you might have seen in the chat that the strength community is open, and as I said. There we have two packages, one which is $19, which includes two training plans and one for hypertrophy and the other one for metabolic conditioning, and a discount of 15% on the supplements, Nutridyne and ATP. And the second package includes three different training programs, relative strength, hypertrophy, and metabolic conditioning. And also, from now on, it will include two educational videos every month. And all the webinars will be on that package as well. All the webinars that I have done on lower back and testosterone and so on. And the discount of supplements is 20%. And of course, as I mentioned in the beginning, the first 50 sign-ups will get a $150 gift certificate if you guys want to attend a class during this year, 2023. I'm going to be teaching. It's going to be a busy schedule, but just so you know that if for the first 50 that subscribe, we'll get that discount in the classes if you want to take advantage. I always like to support people who want to learn. So Anthony's made a question which is very interesting, and he said that he would like our opinion on. Although I suspect the answer, on topical cortisol injections for injuries, tennis elbow, shoulders, etc. I don't like cortisone injections. Basically, what they are trying to do is decrease inflammation. Yes, it is very fast for decreasing inflammation, but it's not efficient decreasing inflammation. Because it has two problems. First, it can destroy tissue around the problem area, which will make the athlete or person prone or more prone to get injured again and in a worse manner. And second, it is that it doesn't allow the full recovery of the tissues. So both of the side effects will put the athlete or person in a higher predisposition to get injured again. So I don't use that for inflammation. I use my inflammation protocol. You guys are attending the webinar. It's basically PRM, pro-resolve mediators from Nutridyne. It's vitamin D3. It is fish oil and it's curcumin. And that resolves inflammation in a matter of weeks. Tony was mentioning when an athlete get injured, if you're lucky, you start training the athlete again after 8 weeks. With that protocol, I used it with Hind for her knee surgery 4 weeks after we were training. So it's good. I'm glad you liked the discussion, Antonis. I want to make another one. I want to keep making this. Aaron is asking, how will you play the strength deficit according to the needs of the sport? In the strength deficit, I'm going to give you two ends of the spectrum. If you're in a sport that is just a ballistic sport, a power sport like the shot put or javelin or hammer throw, it's just the concentric motion. There's no eccentric on it. So on that sport, you want the strength deficit to be the smallest or the lowest possible. So if you have a strength deficit of 1%, and for those of you that are not familiar with the term, it's the difference between concentric and eccentric strength. So if the difference is about 1%, you will have your athlete ready to compete. And the other one, you will need a sport like, let's say, if you go in the middle of the spectrum, you will have basketball, but you also need sprinters, because on the sprinters, you need a lot of absorbing, which is eccentric. You can go up to 150%, 180%, 175%. 175 is kind of the maximum, but that's how you play, and it will depend on the sport. And you will need to program yourself properly to get whether to a very low strength deficit or to get to a very high strength deficit. Bodybuilding needs a high strength deficit, for example. Bader is asking, Coach Carlos, what's your exercise selection for peaking for a kickboxer 2 to 3 weeks out of competition, assuming that they're already done the strength phase? Well, if you are peaking a kickboxer 2 to 3 weeks out of competition, you actually will only have maximum, and that's extending, 2 weeks, because you need to do the tapering. And for that, I will move the person into power movements. If the person is strong enough and has already learned how to do Olympic lifts, I will have the person move from strength to Olympic lifts in the power version. So mostly power snatch, power clean, and power jerk, very important power jerk for punchers, because that will give them speed. And that's basically the way I would manage it. I would just move them to that. If they don't know how to do it, you will have to go in a different route. And that's kind of, you will need to be able to convert strength into power, and you will have to do that with heavy lifts and plyometrics somehow. The whole explanation will be very long, but in essence, what you need to do before sport that is powerful, provided that everything was done correctly, is move the person into power. So Aaron is saying, in a perfect world, how long will you plan, or how many phases will you plan to change from strength to power phases? In essence, to change from strength to power, I will do only one transitional phase, and then the power phase. The transitional phase, I will do something like I just mentioned. That's called contrast training. And then after the contrast training, I would move into the Olympic lifts and the power version. In essence, or any power movement that the person can do. For example, I like power bench presses with bands. Specifically with bands. I really like them. Chains, I also like them, but you need to measure speed and so on. You need good eye or good tools. So in a perfect world, that's the way I would do it. I hope I'm answering your question, Aaron. So Martin Lopez is saying, thank you both for sharing such valuable information ranging from your training, certifications, and experience. I will try to keep an eye on and I will apply that knowledge. Thank you. It is our pleasure, Martin. That's why we do this. We know that knowledge needs to be shared, and having a coach, extraordinary coach like Tony is very valuable. Antonis, have to leave for class. Thank you very much. See you next week in the Q&A. Antonis, thank you very much for attending, and I will see you next Friday on the Q&A. Antonis is part of the strength community, so he's on the Q&A like religiously every time we do it. Oh, that's what we have, a Q&A session where, like this, you ask your questions and I will spend 30 minutes twice a month to answer your questions. Arthur is saying, what is your opinion about omni-contraction programming? Are you use all the types of muscle contraction in your programs? I've seen it. I haven't played with it. A very good friend of mine and mentor of mine, which is Ben Prentice from Connecticut, uses something similar. He developed a whole system. And in my head, it sounds very good, but it sounds very good depending on the sport. Because there are sports where you don't need that much, for example, an isometric contraction. And there are sports that you need them. And there are sports where you need to remove the eccentric phase of it, like the shot put, as we mentioned. Not remove eccentric phase, but match the strength deficit. And basically, it will depend on the sport. But my agreement with Ben is that this year I'm going to be teaching in Connecticut. And I told him, you have to be at your gym. I don't care which plans you had. Because we need to, there are so many things we need to discuss and talk about. Ben is also extremely knowledgeable. And as I said, one of my mentors, and I love to have those discussions with him. So I will have to give it a try. But whenever I tried something that most probably all of you guys are aware of, which is the conjugated method, normally used in powerlifting, I haven't had good results with my athletes. Why? I don't know. Probably the athletes are not meant. The athletes were not meant for that, but that's my experience with that. Aaron is asking, will you train phases of power, taking into account that after training with you, they will do an off-season period with the team doing a lot of sprinting, jumping, etc.? I will have to see the full program, but I will do a power phase if the athlete needs power for competition. If the athlete does not need it, I don't see a point. If it's a sport that doesn't require it, I don't see a point. If it's a sport that requires it and it is competition, I would do it. But if it's, as you said before, an off-season. Before off-season, I'm assuming you're training in season. And if you're training in season, as Tony eloquently explained it, you need to make sure to maintain and gain a little bit of strength. You need to maintain and try to gain a little bit of muscle mass and whatever you need to do for the sport to make it work better. So in essence, that will depend on those factors, because if you're doing that power during the in season, you have to be careful. As I said, I will need to see the whole programming for the off season. And most normally in the off season, athletes come to me because that's when they have time to train. Let me see what else we have here. How will you plan, like with a tennis player, where there is a huge difference between one arm or another, finding a big handicap doing movements like chins and dips? For tennis players or any sport that is very unilateral and creates that, I prefer to go as much as possible unilateral as well, in order to try to offset the differences. They are not always super easy to offset, but as Tony explained it, and I agree with him, you need to make it as close as possible. With the swimmer with the weak external rotators and only 4 to 8 weeks to build up, what will be the frequency to build quick up, to build up quickly, several times a week, even in leg days, a session with different exercise for them, etc.? It will depend on the neurotransmitter of the person, and it will depend on the rest of your training plan. You can use both. If you use high frequency, you have to reduce the number of sets and you have to reduce the volume. If you don't do high frequency and you train them, let's just say every 5 days or every 3 days or whatever it is for your athlete, you have to make sure that the athlete can progress in weight when you do it. What is the best for your athlete? That will depend on the athlete, and that will depend on how the person adapts. But the most important thing that you need to keep in mind is that the athlete is recovered on those movements, no matter which option you choose. I have used both. Both work very well, at least on my athletes. But one thing I kept measuring, like I keep a very sharp eye on it, it's recovery. If at some point I see that the weight cannot be increased even by 0.0125 kilos, I would stop it, because then you could overtrain the external rotators and then the problem is worse. So that's why you have to be careful with that. Arthur is saying, thank you, coach. It is my pleasure. Martin, it is my pleasure also for being here, and thank you very much for being with us. And Aaron is clarifying something. No, in season, they do and off season with me, but after they get back with the team. Oh, I know what you mean, is when they come back to the team. If they are going to be tested, yes. But power, remember that power is very demanding on the central nervous system, but not on the muscular system. And whatever they do when they come back to their own training, or the team training, if you will, it's kind of like more muscular and endurance and so on. So I wouldn't be particularly worried about that happening. All right, guys. So thank you all. Thank you for attending. It is very nice to be with a coach like Tony. And it is very nice receiving all of these questions. So my idea is to plan more of these seminars, webinars, however you want to call them, interviews, interactions, chats. It doesn't really matter. And I will keep you posted. I'm happy that you enjoyed it. And see you guys soon. Don't forget, those of you who want to take advantage of the launching of the membership site, you can just click there. And it will take you directly to, so you can sign up. Eman, it was my pleasure. And see you guys soon. You have a good evening and a good weekend. Take care.